presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, MJ?
As long as he doesn't throw the wrench at me, then everything should, okay. Everything should be okay.
Well, let's see how these next 15 minutes go, and then we'll determine all that. You're in Ottawa, right? You're doing the game tonight?
I am. I wake up and I look outside, and it looks very spring-like to me. I'm like, is the rideau frozen over again? What is going on here? Is the last kick of winter getting the best of us?
Well, it never froze at all. So now, you know what? Yeah. In this year, maybe this will be the time. You'll get out there on the blades to finish off. So, all right, couple of things on the Sens. I want to get to you with you, Mike. I think talked to you a few times about Tyler Cleven, and of course, mm-hmm. you have a similar story of coming out of college and going directly into the National Hockey League as Tyler will when he makes his debut tonight. One of the aspects with him, though, is his game, very physical style of game. That's really what separates him. Pierre Dorion said as much from the other prospects in the organization of the physicality to his game. In terms of, though, you can be physical in the NCAA, and then, as they say, the cage comes off and you're in the National Hockey League and everybody is bigger and stronger and faster and everything. Is it a guarantee that his style of work, his style of play that worked in college is going to work necessarily at the NHL level?
There are no guarantees, of course, at the NHL level. But there's a guarantee that attitude, that he embraces physicality, should translate well. Like, you know, college, NHL, they're all different. They all kind of present different kind of challenges. In the college, things are quite physical, actually, not fighting-wise, but just guys running into each other, a lot of the stick work and all the rest of it. But, you know, if he brings that I like getting involved in contact attitude, which he does, as opposed, you know, kind of like his personality, then that will be there, and that will help him in the NHL. What will matter, though, especially early tonight, is if you are, like, everyone likes to do kind of what they're good at, right? Like, if you're a playmaker, you want to make plays. If you're a physical guy, you want to hit somebody. If you're a fighter, you want to fight someone. Early in your first game in your career. And the key for him will be not to chase trying to be physical. Not be out there looking for hits, try to step up and finding them, just playing your game, having the patience that they will come to you. And then when they're there, you know, you got to make the most of them, which is important for him. But physicality is weird. Like, it's going to be there. But if you chase it, you can put yourself in some tough spots. So I'll be watching early to make sure that he doesn't kind of go out of his way trying to, you know, show what he can do or prove that he can do it at this level. Just be patient because it'll get there.
DJ Smith talked yesterday when he said he's going to put him with Nick Holden, you know, the old Wiley veteran. And you know, Nick Holden will even tell him where to line up off, on a faceoff. Like, do we kind of strip it right? He's played hockey his entire life, talking about Tyler Cleven.
Right.
We have to strip it right down to stand right here, kid, off a face. Like, is that the level we need to go to?
I don't think so. I mean, I played with Wendell Clark my first game. Like, he wasn't like, hey, off the face off, make sure to, you know, like, I'm like, I'm in the NHL too. Like, I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. I appreciate the thoughts, but I'm supposed to be aware of what's going on as well. If he has questions, if they're playing Philly and, it's like, okay, be aware of Kevin Hayes. He'll reach with his stick. He won't be on your body. Like, you know, he can give little tips along the way, but the idea of, you know, be here in the faceoffs, that seems a little bit much. Unless you don't know the system. Like, unless, you know, he does have a lot to absorb the last few days. Now, I might be the minority amongst the players in this because I hear a lot of players say, well, you know, it took me a few weeks to kind of get settled in and understand the system. I'm like, few weeks? Talkie. No system is that complicated. None. At most, it should take you a few hours and maybe a few reps on the ice to have 95% of the system dialed in. So, you know, I don't want to hear, well, he didn't know he was supposed to go back there. He didn't know he was the last man back and he doesn't have any weak side support. Like, just show me. And you should be able to process that. I don't know. I've always been of the mindset it shouldn't take that long to kind of feel comfortable within the system. So, but that's the other part of it. You know, he's got the system to kind of digest as well as everything else that's going on in his world.
You talked about, the advice that Nick Holden will share to him probably as they sit on the bench. Hey, you know, watch this guy because he does this or what. How long does it take a player to be able to recognize a player from the opposing team coming down the ice? In other words, you know, if you're Tyler Cleven, you've never obviously played against Kevin Hayes before in your life. Like, do you, you see a guy in an orange jersey, or I guess a white jersey, coming down the ice tonight with a Flyer emblem on the front, but do you know who it is?
No.
Yeah.
No, it'd probably take him a couple of trips to the league. And it doesn't help that it's Philly right now. Like, oh, is that Wade Allison? Like, what do I know about Wade Allison? Oh, Morgan Frost. I've been watching him for years. Like, they got some guys who are good players that, you know, even guys who've been in the NHL wouldn't be completely familiar with that much because they're relatively new in their careers. So it'll be a few laps around the league before he has a sort of immediate, innate knowledge of the players that he's going up against. But, you know, that's all part of the adjustment. But they also don't know you, right? Like, they don't know what you like to do. They know how fast you are, how big you are, how strong you are, what you like to do. So it cuts both ways in that, you know, they don't have any familiarity with you and what you might be good at.
Do you look at, I mean, ideally, you'd all, you know, you want an NHL defense to be, you know, built around, you know, great puck movers, guys who can, you know, transport the puck up and down the ice is ideal in today's game. How much do you think that size, because Klevin's got really good size and he's rangy, he's a pretty good skater for a guy his size. How much is size still a part, do you believe, of today's game? The importance
of it. Well, big and good is better than small and good. But good has to be the constant, right? So if you can bring size to it, like, there is an advantage there. Like, there is still an element of the game that involves physical confrontation. Battling for space, battling for pucks, strength in those tight areas around the net. And it can be, if one of the things you can bring to that confrontation is size and weight and strength, that's a good thing. So long as you can skate and think and pass as well. It can't just be big, because then we've seen what happens, and that doesn't really exist in the game anymore. But, you know, guy who just got traded, Matthias Ekholm, right? So he's a big guy. He's not super physical, but, you know, he's very, very effective because he can use that kind of range to be a good defensive defenseman. I think, you know, Klevin will have to figure out what works at this level. Like, am I a good enough skater that I can do this? Do I have to rely on my strength that I have to do that? Like, this is all part of his learning process, which is why it's kind of a tricky time, because Ottawa, we'll get into last night, we're not done any favors last night, unfortunately. But, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs. But, you know, he is still playing in what feels like important games. So it's not like it's strictly a time to experiment and learn. But these games are for him to experiment and learn, so that he will be better served next year when he tries to make the team full-time. So, you know, it's all part of the process of what he's going to go through the next couple of weeks.
So I was lamenting earlier this morning that, you know, the NHL doesn't feel right when the Philadelphia Flyers are just kind of a blah franchise, right? They're, you know, I think a lot of us grew up in the time when the Flyers were, they weren't you know, Montreal or Toronto in terms of from a Canadian point of view, but they're a very popular team and they still have a ton of fans. But man, they've been irrelevant, it seems like, for a very, very long time. Do you foresee under Danny Briere that you think, and maybe based on his comments, that they are going to strip it right down and tear it down, maybe not to the studs like the Sens did, but you know, to a pretty large extent, and undergo a, you know, pretty big rebuild going forward?
It might not go to the studs, but we're going to see some insulation. Like, it's going to be pretty close, because, you know, I think Danny realizes that the team is stuck sort of in between, in that, you know, they got a whole bunch of players that are decent players, but the team as a whole is not quite good enough. And the path forward would be to kind of shed some of those salaries, get good young players, and have them build together and grow together. And that takes time. And they haven't really been committed all the way to that process. Like, they've done a little bit of it, but not entirely. Like, I don't think Philly was planning on being bad this year. That wasn't the intention. So I think a more intentioned path, and maybe a more articulated path. Like, this is where we're headed, whether it's the New York Rangers letter to the fan base or whatever it might be, that this is where we're going, and this is why, and this is how we're going to get there. And I think they will probably do that. Now, the question is, can they dump some of those salaries? Like, they have so many guys that are, you know, whether it's Sanheim or Provorov or Ryan Ellis is kind of continually injured, Couturier, like these guys who make big money that are good players but don't really help Philly be where they want to be in 3 or 4 years. You know, what do they do with those guys? That's kind of the bigger question. But, yeah, I think they're in for a couple more years of a tear down, rebuild, and then kind of build it back up and see where they get to.
You want to ask about Travis Konecny? You're all about the 67s, Mark.
I do. It should be about me, should it not today? Mike, you do an awesome job. I love listening to you. Your insights are awesome. You do a terrific job.
Well, listen, you've already won me over. That listen, we'll cut Jared right out of this. You and I can just chat the rest of the way. We don't need him at all.
Perfect.
Listen, the thing about, here's my story about Travis Konecny, if you're interested in him, because he was having a great year. Looks like he suffered a shoulder injury, will no longer be playing. What was interesting with him, though, is that he thought of himself, and it's like he's been a good NHLer prior to this year, right? Like, a very good player. Makes a lot of money, clearly going to be an NHL guy forever. He didn't think of himself as a very good finisher. So Danny Briere sits down with the analytics department in Philly, and this is how analytics can kind of help a player, even an established one. And they say, okay, well, you don't think you're a good player. This is what you shoot from the high danger areas when you get there. And he found out he shot well above the league average. He's a better finisher than a league average, which was counterintuitive to what he thought about himself. And they say, okay, well, you score basically one out of every three shots when you get there. They're like, can you get there half more time, like one more time every two games? So 41 more times. And if you score enough 30 of your shots, guess what? It's like 13 more goals. So you're a 22-goal scorer. You do that, you're a 35-goal scorer. And he starts processing this information. He's like, shoot, I can get there once every two games and get a good chance. And he kind of puts that into play, and it's a good story because it works. But he put that into play this year and made a concentrated effort to get to the slot where he didn't think he could score from, where he actually learned that he could. And he goes out, and he was having by far the best year of his career this year, kind of applying that. He was on a 40-something goal pace and more than a point-a-game player. So interesting little kind of tidbit about a former Ottawa 67 that, you know, he's still growing and learning about himself well into his career and applying it, and was having a great year before he was injured.
Sounds like Travis Konecny had his Stuart Smalley moment. I can do it. I am good.
Well, sometimes, listen, it's amazing, like, what you think about yourself, and you would think that a player would know, right? Like, I would know what I'm good at. Maybe not. Maybe that's not always the case, because, you know, he had a vision of what he was, and he actually, he's better than he thought he was in certain areas, and he's kind of proven it this year before he was hurt.
Speaking of counterintuitive, when we think of John Tortorella, we have the image of John Tortorella. We see it sort of play itself out behind the bench, and we hear obviously the clips and everything and the things that he says, and we think that guy probably would not be a great coach for a team of young guys rebuilding where there's a lot of losses and et cetera. But then you hear from a lot of people that say actually the opposite is true. John Tortorella would actually be really good for a group like that. What's your view on that?
Well, John Tortorella was that for the group I was part of. He took over for the first time in Tampa in 2000, was in the fall of 2000, for Steve Ludzik. Our team was one of the worst teams in the league, and he took over. And what he does, we see him push buttons and get angry and kind of poke and prod to try to get guys to be their very best. But what he does in a group like Tampa's 20 years ago or Philly this year is that he installs a sense of accountability and a baseline of expectations for what you are as a professional athlete. And when I was in Tampa before he was the head coach, that wasn't there. And it was desperately needed, and he provided it. And it was tumultuous. Like, there were some bumps along the way, and there were some fights with prominent players and less than prominent players, both publicly and privately, but all with the design of getting the team to be where he thought it could be. And eventually, of course, 4 years later, they won the Stanley Cup. So it worked out well for him. In that sense, that's why he can be good. He can be patient with results, but he won't be patient with effort and kind of energy and emotion and passion. And as you're growing, you're going to do more losing than winning. That passion, that emotion can sort of ebb and dissipate. And if it does, it makes the growth that much harder. So, yeah, I see why it works. Even though he can be a bit of a hard coach on players at times, he does it with the intention of getting them to where that he believes and wants them to be. And in his career, he generally gets them there. So that's why it could work.
It's interesting because we hear so much, and it's not just teenage and young 20s hockey players, but just society in general about how kids have changed, right? The kids of now, kids that are growing up now, aren't the same as the kids of 20 years ago. And so let's relate that to a young hockey player. So when you're with the Lightning as a younger hockey player and your teammates around you in 2000 compared to the Flyers young players that he's going to have going forward from here. Can it still, you know, that messaging from 2000, can that still work in 2023 relating to the very, you know, young players coming into the organization?
That's a really good question. It's a good point because, no, like I think, you know, 20 years later, kids have grown up differently, expect different things, communicate differently, react, generally speaking, a little bit differently to maybe some of these ways that John Tortorella might have spoken to him. But the thing is, you can have the same sort of message and demand the same sort of things, but deliver it in a different way, in a more modern way. So maybe you have to communicate differently. I remember, like, stories are well known, like him and Vinny LeCavalier, like just going after each other, like just going after each other, in the room, in the coach's office, because they're both kind of prideful, stubborn guys. But I think you could have the same sort of demands and just maybe deliver them a little bit differently. Mm. And I think Torts also says, you know, there's part of him that says, I don't really care if you're different. Like, I'm going to make it hard on you. I'm going to demand things from you. And we're going to find out if you can sort of stand up to it and bring out the best in you. And if you can, then you're the kind of guy that we think we can believe in it going forward. And if you can't, then maybe you're not. So it's probably a bit of both, him changing and changing with the times, but him also trying to turn back the clock and say, I'm going to give you tough love. It's going to be honest. And I think that at the root is it. Is what you want as an athlete, more than anything else, is that you want to have, you want whoever's in charge to be honest with you. Even if that is bad news, even if it's like, Mike, you're not playing well enough, Mike, you're not strong enough, Mike, you're not whatever. At least I know. If you want to be honest with yourself, at least you know. No games. I think that's what Torts will give you 20 years ago, 2 days ago. He will tell you to your face, with good intentions, exactly where you stand. And so you can't complain about not knowing what's demanded from you, because he tells you exactly what it is. And I think as an athlete, that's always appreciated. And generally, most athletes respond to that sort of candor, which does not exist from all coaches across the NHL, even if people think it does.
Hmm. A couple more for you. DJ Smith was asked yesterday if he's a scoreboard watcher, and it was funny. I don't know if you saw the visual of it, but there's kind of a wry smile that came across his face as he kind of admitted, yeah, to be honest with you, I am watching. So I'm sure some disappointment last night, especially with what went on in Toronto as Florida scored in the last minute to tie it and then ends up winning it in overtime. What did you make of that Florida-Toronto game last night?
Yeah, I mean, listen, as if Ottawa fans need any more reason to dislike the Leafs, like, come on now, like, throw us a bone here. Like, cause you know, if Ottawa was able to win tonight and Florida looked like they're going to lose last night, all of a sudden Ottawa's tied with Florida. And like, they're tracking one more team. Like, you know, it's obviously a long shot, but it becomes a little bit more possible. So yeah, you'd be really disappointed. You watch that whole game. You have no choice but to watch it. And you're hoping for help for the Islanders to lose to Washington, although they're probably too far gone, but certainly Pittsburgh and Florida. You want them to lose every time they're out there, and you think they're going to, and then they lose, they tie it late, and then they get it in overtime, and you're like, nah, you know, it would be frustrating. Yeah. So, you know, I think at this point, legitimately, Ottawa almost has to run the table. Like, they almost can't lose again to have a chance to be there at the end. So that hasn't changed. But it would have been nice for them to feel like psychologically a win would tie them with Florida, which would have been the case had it not gone the way it went late in Toronto.
All right, last one. The Rangers signed Philip Hedl to a 4-year extension at $4.4 million. We kind of saw a bit of his, and it's been a while, 2017 first rounder, but he, as part of that kid line in the playoffs last year with the Rangers, he really started to sort of come into his own, and he's had a real good year this year with 22 goals in 66 games. Do you see that as a nice signing for the Rangers?
Yeah, I mean, they're locking in the centerman with upside potential, even if he just scores as he is this year, 25 goals and 50 points. Formerly, $4.5 million is nothing for a guy who could play in that role. But he might have, you know, 30 goals, 65, 70 points in him, and all of a sudden then that deal becomes a real bargain. So a good bet for the Rangers to take on a guy who's seemingly just finding his game this year.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. You get to your 60. You got any more 67s questions for Mike?
No, I'm good.
You're good? Okay. You learned everything you know?
Do you have any more effusive compliments for me?
Mike, no. you're the best on TV and radio combined. It's a pleasure to have you working in this Ottawa market.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I don't. I can, I you might be being sarcastic, but I take it. I love any pumping of my tires I can get, even if it's not sincere. I appreciate that. And you're the best Ottawa sports executive I've spoken to this morning. So good on you.
All right, good stuff. Mike, enjoy the game tonight. Look forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right, talk to you.